You were. I asked you about the Germans who were here, and you said they were. Were they from Canada?
Yeah, but over 40 miles. See, the Mounted Police used to have a headquarters there, and it wasn't the headquarters, but they had a
station.
Station there. Well, then they kicked them all out of Canada, but they had to report back there. That's how three or four of them, you know, wound up in Eagle.
But they were Canadian citizens.
No, I don't know if they had alien. Their citizen papers yet at that
aliens,
time.
Aliens, weren't they?
Huh?
Were they aliens, I think?
I suppose, yeah. But old Max Drews, he told me that when he came to the United States, the Spanish-American War was going on. And they offered him his citizenship if he didn't enlist in the Army. And he says he should have done it because he says just a little while afterwards that, you know, peace was declared.
Yeah.
But he was a fine old man, honest as the day is long. But he went into more ventures and failed. I hate to see that old fellow go. He was kind of a stern, had a kind of a stern military way of talking, you know. But he was an old Prussian guard, you know. He was
right?
He was in the old Kaiser's Prussian guard. Yeah.
Well, what did they do? Were they prospectors or?
Mm-hmm. Just the average run mm-hmm. of citizens. I don't know, but that was before my time when this here Frolic and Coomer, they were two German. And Charlie Ott, he wasn't one of them. He was a German, old country German, born in Heidelberg.
Now, is this Charlie Ott the same Ott who was down in mining out a rampart?
Uh-uh.
No relation.
No relation. We had four Otts here at one time, and
no,
it wasn't related.
Related.
It was Charlie Ott and Billy Ott and John Ott and this Martin Ott, one of the Otts from Rampart.
Yeah.
He was working down a sheep creek. He was all here at the same time.
Is that right?
Yeah. None of them related. It's an odd name.
Yeah, it is an odd name because.
Yeah,
the Otts were over in the Rampart area, the Martin Otts.
Yeah, that's where all them
the
boys
were. The Martin Ott of Fairbanks now was born over there.
Yeah.
Yes.
All them boys was born over there.
Yeah. Pretty good sized family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were working down here at Sheep Creek, driving cat and hauling Heine Miller's wood. And I see him off and on. He's in the post office now, I think.
Martin Ott.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, now he may be retired. I don't know. His son. I kind of have a hunch that Martin Ott is retired now, and his son, Martin, must be Martin III.
Yeah, I suppose.
Is working for the post office department.
Oh.
Real nice young guy.
Well, Martin Sr., he was over there on Garden Island.
Yeah, right. But anyway, the old roadhouse down here, the Steels, you say, the Bob Steels.
Mm-hmm. Built the Steel Hotel.
They're the same Steels who built the Steel Hotel.
That's Al Stout's father-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, old Mom Steele just died here a couple of years ago.
Not too long ago.
Yeah.
You know how that Steel Hotel, when they tear some of those old buildings down, I go around and see if I can get a little souvenir piece of wood.
Yeah.
The fellow who, well, I asked for it. I don't steal it. You know, usually they're sometimes they just take a bulldozer and push them over.
Yeah.
So I did that on the Nevada bar. I went in there and grabbed a piece.
Because
they
be
just
darned.
Shoved it in, you know.
Yeah.
So I didn't ask anybody. I just went and took me a board.
Oh, yeah.
But when they were tearing down the Steel Hotel, this fellow who was tearing it down, I know him, and I'd go by there every day. And so I told him what I wanted. I wanted a board from the original old building inside. So one day I walked by and he says, "You ready for that board, Mike?" And I said, "Yep." So he went in and he brought me out a nice sized board.
Yeah.
18 inches long and old paint on it, you know, that had.
Well, if it had old paint on it.
Years and years ago.
Yeah.
It had to be old.
Old Bob shipped a lot of this old post lumber over there.
Is that right?
Yeah. A lot of that lumber next to the hotel came out of this.
You know, that is milled lumber and it has little.
Yeah, beaded ceiling, they call it.
Yeah, I don't know how it is, but I see it around town, how one edge of the board is grooved out, and then it slips under the other one,
yeah,
you know, and that's what this is.
Yeah.
And then he came out, and he had a key on a key ring. It says, "Room 19, Steel Hotel."
I'll be darned.
So he was giving those out just to people who really wanted to, a good
Didn't
souvenir.
Somebody say they found a lot of papers and newspapers or in something that they tore down?
I think he found some old, stuff there.
Yeah.
That was only built in 1938, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he brought a lot of this old lumber.
From this place here?
Yeah.
Somebody said, I thought somebody said that he moved the building down.
No.
No, he didn't.
No, he bought some lumber here and tore a building down and bundled it all up and shipped it down on the steamboat. Mm-hmm. Down the circle and hauled it across. No, George Black brought it up on a scow.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So that piece of board I have is really old then.
It is.
It's got old paint on it.
Yeah.
And it's got that groove on the edge. Yeah, or not groove.
I bet you that piece of board is, anyhow, 75 years old.
Yeah. Well, that just means that much more. I'm glad I talked to you.
Yeah, you know who can tell you about that lumber? It's old Danny Agababa.
Danny Agababa? Did he help bring it over?
No, but he was right there on the bank when they couldn't make it up underneath the bridge. So they unloaded it down there below the marker, you know, or that monument they got there. And then they carried it up there, where the steel hotel is on.
Well, did Danny help him, or did he stand there and watch?
He was just standing there watching.
That's what he seems to be.
Yeah.
Huh?
He was just a kid, anyhow.
Yeah, a little bit of a pot-bellied kid. He used to go around there with his little bib overhauls on it. You wouldn't, I can't make myself believe that that's the same Danny Agababa. Yeah. I remember him, he's just a little bit of a fellow, peddling papers around town. Now he looks like he's 110 years old.
But I was going to say that the only time I ever see him, he's just standing by watching something.
Yeah.
I never have seen him. Of course, I never have been around.
Well, once in a while he works.
Yeah.
But I get more kick out of talking to him. He calls himself a Mediterranean Irishman. He's quite a dandy.
I don't know him very well. Do you, Adriana?
Oh, I just to speak to.
Yeah. Is he a talker like Steve?
Oh, if he gets started, boy, he can make a quite a spiel.
Yeah.
Oh, Danny can. He know he ain't as bad as Steve.
And I don't know if he bought it or how, but you know that over there at Rabbit Island, he has a lot of that property over in there.
Yeah.
Well, his father used to have his kennels there. Don't you think they probably acquired it? From that?
That's how he knew the property line, you see, was through old Mike.
Yeah.
He had the kennel down there.
Yeah, because when I first went to Fairbanks, Mike's kennels were down there, and some of the people I knew had dogs.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite an establishment now. You know, they've got all kinds of, not the first class housing, I would say, but they've got a lot of houses down there, Rabbit Island.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll build up.
Well, tell me about some of the characters who lived in Eagle. Some you can just think of offhand. Maybe we'll think of some others as we go along.
We had one famous character here, old Nimrod.
Nimrod?
Yeah, he was a state of Manor. He was a jeweler, a watchmaker and a jeweler.
Oh, I see.
And he can—he was a genius.
He's the fellow who's made that map up in the courthouse.
Yeah, and he made them famous hunting knives, he said he could make anything but a living. He was right. He could make any darn thing.
Well, he must have made a living. He lived up here.
Yeah, he looked kind of meager though. He was coming across country down here above the mouth of 70 Mile between here and Eagle, and he went all in, and he just laid down on the ice and died right in the wintertime when the overflow was coming down.
Yeah, right in the overflow?
Yeah, well, they overflowed afterwards.
Yeah.
And they sent out a party, and Charlie Biederman down here and Gus Douglas worked for the road commissioner over there.
Yeah, there
he is. Over there in Fairbanks, and Dolph Schoenberger found him. And they chopped him out and hauled him into town and thawed him out.
Into town, you mean here? And
yeah. Well, he was a famous character. That is, he was famous because he was supposed to have killed a bear and then made a set of false teeth out of the bear's teeth and caribou teeth and fox teeth and ate the bear. And well, he did. He had the meat in a old hard rock tunnel that was frozen all the time.
Frozen, yeah.
In the summertime.
Yeah. I'll be darned.
So he... he made a deal with two dentists coming down the river, drifting down on a float trip from Seattle, and they made him a new set, and that set that he made, the Ape Barrel, is in the medical building there in Seattle.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Huh. I've heard that story about Nimrod, but I didn't know he was from this area. What was his name? Was it Thompson or?
No, E.A. Robertson.
Robertson. Yeah. Robertson. E.A. Robertson?
E.A. Robertson, yeah. Yeah.
Has anybody ever done any real writing on him?
Just they made, when he died, they had a lot of hocus pocus. I don't know who wrote it, but there's all a lot of whack in it.
Where was it? In the Fairbanks paper?
No, Time magazine.
Time?
Somebody wrote up. Ernie Pyle, you know, wrote him up once. An old man Biederman, he was a mailman here with both his feet cut off and still carrying mail, you know. And so he was a kind of a character up and down the river. And Ernie Pyle wrote him up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, I would say that he had to be something if he had both feet cut off and was still carrying the mail.
Well, they were cut off right down, straight down over his instep.
Oh, I see.
He still had his heels and all that.
Yeah. He froze his toes. And
yeah, he got an overflow with the mail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now that's Charlie Biederman. Was that the Biederman who had the store here? Was Horace, right?
Yeah. Well, that was his dad, his stepdad.
Well, this fellow Horace Biederman from Eagle right now, that's his...
That's Horace Biederman Sr.'s boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got a sister over here in out of Tolk, up towards north of there. She's just the opposite of him. Just as sweet a person you care to meet.
Well, the Horace Biederman Sr., was he a German?
No, he's half-breed Indian.
Half-breed Indian.
And half Scotch.
And half Scotch.
An old man Biederman married her and took Horace in, and that's how that came about.
Well, go over that one again.
she didn't get that.
I didn't get that because he said the old man Biederman married her. Where'd her come in?
That's Horace's mother.
Horace's mother.
Yeah.
Oh. Was, but that's not his father. Horace Biederman Sr. isn't his father, is that it?
No, old Ed Biederman wasn't Horace Biederman's father. Guy by the name of Tom Hunter in Circle, a barber, was his father, but the old man took him and her in when he married her and gave him his name. That's where the name Biederman came from.
So it's his stepson, really.
Yeah, Horace Sr. Yeah. And then this kid here, or this guy here, Horace, married a girl from Old Crow, half French and half Indian. And that's Junior's mother. The guy they call Junior. Yeah, everybody calls him Junior over here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then his sister, everybody calls her Flossie. Her name is Florence. And she's just the nicest little person you could ever imagine.
Well, were you here when Nimrod died?
Yeah, I was down trapping.
What'd they do when they brought him in?
Well, they thawed
him out.
Yeah, Charlie Ott was living in that lodge building over there then.
Where the roadhouse is now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He had a room fixed up back there. Then he ate a meal a day over there at Mrs. Steele's, over the Steele Roadhouse.
I see.
Or the evening meal, and he cooked his own breakfast. That's all he ate. He used to own the store here one time. He sold out the NC company, Ott and Shield. Well, then they laid him out in that dining room part.
Right now where the dining room is?
Yeah. And he kept a fire going there for a long time. Finally thawed him out and laid him out. Well, then the independent order, or the order of the Redmen, was operating active then.
Mm-hmm.
And so they buried him.
They had the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Yeah.
He's buried here in the...
Up here in the cemetery.
Yeah. I should try to get up there. How far up is the cemetery?
Oh, it's up in the woods, half a mile or something like that.
All right, can you still read some of the names on the grave markers?
Yeah, but they're making a mistake up there. They just take a piece of board and nail it. This Wyman Fritz over here, a lot of people condemn him, but there's some of his goodness right there. He's done more good around this town than any two people, yeah. And he used to make them headboards out of this here 3-inch redwood that used to come from over at the post.
Mm-hmm.
And
engrave the name in it?
No, no, he just made a nice headboard out of it, and then he'd stencil the names on. Well, after he went to work for the road commission, wasn't here anymore. There's several buried there. You can just barely tell who they are. They just took a nail and scratched in this piece of board to make a cross.
I see.
Well, then crosses rot off and tipped over. Yeah. I went up there one time and drove a lot of them back down the ground again. But you have to look close to see
who it is.
Yeah.
Well, maybe the historical people here. I guess everybody in town belongs to the Historical Society.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they could make that a project one of these winters.
They should.
I know over there in Fairbanks, was it Alaska Link telling me that somebody's got a pretty good diagram of the cemetery, the old cemetery.
Yeah. Here in Eagle?
No, in Fairbanks. Yeah. Because, you know, for a while there, the city didn't pay much attention. And
mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure who it is who has it. But then they could tell who was buried where, and then they go back and
Sure, you should keep a record of it, too,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, do you know who has that, Adriana, in Fairbanks? Who might
I thought the mortuary had it.
Maybe so.
I think so.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
That's the way it worked when I buried my boy back home. The undertaker took care of it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they, I know Merle Thomas when he was here, when, you know, before he died. People would go down there then. That's before this new people took it over.
Yeah.
So I imagine it went with.
Yeah.
Hodges and all.
Well, I suppose it'd be easy to copy it off too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For,
yeah, part of this up here is the old military.
Yeah.
You know, cemetery too. So it's a beautiful place.
Maybe there's some records in the city records here.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
No, because we pulled a dead man out of a fish wheel up here one time. An Indian caught him in the fish wheel. And he was an even 30 days coming down from Dawson. He was it was old George Williams. He was the old ex-commissioner up there one time.
Is that right?
Yeah. He was working in the powerhouse, and he walked out to the edge of the bank where they got a riprap right there in the cotton, got it all filled in, and he had a kind of a blackout spell, and he fell in, staggered in overboard.
Oh,
when he hit the water, he probably
hit his head or something.
No, he just blacked out, and this plumber was running there trying to catch him, and he went under, and this Indian caught him in the fish wheel. So there was nothing. They held services for him up in Dawson already, you see. So he was a Shriner, and just look at habit, there was about four or five of them right here in town. So they took over, and he was in pretty bad shape too. Because I went up, I'd done all the dirty work on that deal. Ed Brathett was the commissioner, and Horace Senior had his boat and kicker, and the three of us went up there and got him out of the wheel, and wrapped canvas around and kept him underwater all the time. Well, then the mounted police had to come down to identify him and make a record of it. So he was underwater here for a long. I just had a door and some rocks on top to hold him underwater. Then they took him down to the sawmill here and put him in his casket. And the stench, gee, got into your clothes. I just threw all my clothes away.
And he started the electric light plant in Dawson, George Williams.
Yeah, yeah. Nice.
He was there when we were there.
Oh yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's buried up here.
He is.
Yeah.
The Shriners had a funeral here for him?
Yeah. Yeah, they took over and buried him with Masonic rites, you know. So then he's buried there. Then there's old Nimrod, you can barely see his name, and Dover, and three or four more of them. And it's a darn shame. They should keep it up.
Well, how do you feel about the State Historical Society, or the State Historical Museum, or somebody coming in here and helping the town of Eagle do some of those things? Do you think that they should, money-wise, help out, or do you think they ought to keep their nose out of it? Or?
I can't see a thing like the cemetery. Gee whiz, that would be an asset to the community if they done something like that.
How about the old mule barn? I'm really impressed by some of the stuff you have in there.
Oh, yeah.
Valuable stuff. And Mrs. Waller, who conducts this tour, says that they lost the seat off of that buggy in there, great big wide seat off of that big wagon.
Mm-hmm.
And the gold scales out of the museum.
Down just here in the customs office. Well,
yeah, just in the last few weeks. People breaking in, or they, you know, they pick them up while they're on tour, I guess.
Yeah. That's the way it goes.
That's a shame.
When a new road comes in, when a road comes into into a piece of country, you can expect that kind of a riffraff to come in, you see. Never had trouble like that before that road come in.
Yeah.
And when everything was on the ground before the airplanes took over the mail contract, that's what really knocked the country.
Yeah. I suppose they started hauling them out.
Well, they started hauling the mail with the airplane. Well, that knocked the old pack train out the 40 mile out, and Percy DeWolf and his mail run, the old man Biederman had the mail run down the circle.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's had trails open, and the steamboat had the mail contract in the summer, and they had to have wood, and gee, everything going along fine. And all of a sudden, it seems like when they lost the mail contract, that's when it started to go downhill. Because that was really a help to the community, with the mail contract.
Well, it kept the steamers coming in the summer, too.
Yeah.
It kept transportation cheaper, and it kept passengers coming in and out.
You could get your mail every 10 days, either upstream or downstream.
Mm-hmm.
And they were regular. They was on a regular schedule. Now, the sun goes behind a cloud, the old plane will stay home.
Yeah. Well, it was behind lots of clouds the other day when we flew in. Because we went way up high. We were in a Twin Beach.
Oh, yeah.
There was a lot of freight coming over. So they switched planes, and we came in a Twin Beach. We sat in the back by the... Mrs. Coyle wanted me to sit by the window, or suggested I... because she didn't want to sit by it. But she got the cold part, because she was right next to the cargo door, and there was quite a little breeze coming in there.
Darn right. I rode a lot of miles in one of them things up north there.
Well, there was quite a little breeze coming in around that cargo door. So
Jim was off and had one, and every darn time that tail wheel hit the ground making a landing, that door would fly open. Yeah, that latch. So I just carried a leather shoestring in my pocket just on kind of, and I'd tie the darn thing shut.
Well, it didn't do that the other day.
No, it didn't fly open, but it was kind of chilly.
Old Jim McLaughlin would have had his mechanics fix that door latch.
Not flying anything now, but... Hercules, 130s. They have some small aircraft they just use themselves. But
I remember when Jim came to town.
Do you?
Yeah.
To Fairbanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Golly sakes, he'd done all right for himself.
Yeah, they've got airplanes flying over in Africa and flying up to the North Pole. And they had one or two over in Southeast Asia. They've got one or two in Fairbanks now, back and forth between Fairbanks and the slope.
Mm-hmm.
Different places.
Well, they haul an awful load.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, and when they lose one, boy, that's a lot of money going there.
I guess you saw where they cracked one up at T3 Ice Island.
Yeah, up on the Ice Island. Then he lost one when they first started in right there at Prudhoe Bay.
No, Alaska Airlines washed one up.
Oh, yeah?
That was Alaska Airlines, yeah.
Oh, when the pilot got killed?
There were two killed in there.
Two killed in there, yeah, that's right.
Co-pilot and engineer, I think. The pilot survived. Now, that was Alaska Airlines, because I worked for the paper then. I worked that up, and I remember that one. But this one up at Ice Island, it was an unfortunate thing. It had one of his most experienced pilots. It's one of those freaky things that happens.
Sure.
It was, you know how the wind drifts up there. The wind blows all the time on the coast.
Okay.
Never stops. And they'd been in to T3 several days before, or a week before, and they told him to smooth it off a little bit because the drifts, you know, can come up too high. Mm-hmm. So they dozed it off, and the wind blew, and the plane, when they touch ground, they don't have flying speed. According to one fellow I talked to, is an old Hercules pilot. So when they touch down, they're down.
You bet you.
They can't gun it and get back up. Mm-hmm. But there was just a small, and it was kind of a, you know, it wasn't a whiteout condition, but it was white out enough where they couldn't see. Just a small drift had come across, and the wheels hit that and bounced it up enough, and when it came down, it just hit hard, and the wings just went off. The wings just broke right off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But they're repairing it right now.
Up there?
Up there.
Yeah,
they flew the parts in, and the mechanics,
well,
they've been there.
There.
Well, they were insured. I think they've recovered from insurance, but they're just fixing the airplane up, and they'll have it back in the air again pretty soon.
Max Brewer hasn't got anything more to do with that, is he?
No, he's through up there.
Uh-huh.
For right now, he may go back for all I know. But he's commissioner of, I don't know what they call
environmental
it.
Environmental.
Well, he's an environmental conservationist.
What was it? I thought it was the...
Well, that covers sanitation, too. Is that an airplane?
No, that's a helicopter.
Oh, yeah, a helicopter.
He's based over here by the BLM building.
Well, tell me about this Redmond Lodge. I walked by that, and you say the I think you said something about the Redmond being active.
They were.
Yeah. Well, tell me about that lodge and what kind of a outfit was it?
Well, their headquarters. I think Wyman used to be the clerk for them here. You know, and I think he told me their headquarters is back in Ohio.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is it a lodge something like the Eagles or Elks?
Yeah.
Or
yeah, the same thing in modern Woodman
America. Fraternal.
Yeah, fraternal
organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know. Then there was two of them here, Arctic Brotherhood at one time, too. And Wyman's dad tore the old hall down. He bought it. Well, Wyman owns that one, too.
Does Wyman own that
one? Mm-hmm. Wyman owns that.
Boy, I hope he doesn't tear that down. That's a handsome old building.
Yeah, but the darn thing is settling, and the old dance floor's got a big pump in it.
Yeah, but it could be,
could be repaired. Yeah, it is in good shape, the walls and the roof.
I was looking at it today. There's not too many openings in it. It would make a good, secure place for a museum.
Oh, yeah.
Gosh, I really am impressed with some of the things you have here. You know, more than we have in our museums in Fairbanks.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of soured against so many museums. You know, the old Jack Hillard had the old original popcorn roaster, peanut roaster, from over on the post down in his garage. He was always had some old relic like that. And it was in his way. He says, you want this damn thing? He says, I'm going to haul it down to the dump. And I says, sure, I'll take it home. And had four little rubber-tired wheels on it. And a real fancy thing. It had a little steam boiler on it and a whistle. A little governor, he wound up. So I gave it to the museum. Well, here his son come along about 30 years afterwards and as much as accused me of stealing it. I said, Jack Hillard gave me that thing, and I wheeled it home. He was standing in the door watching me go home with it and laughing, getting a big bang out of it. And it sat out here in the garage for years. Funny that kids didn't break the, it had little windows on it.
Yeah, I saw it down in the museum.
Yeah.
Is that the same one?
Yeah, that's the same one.
Well, what did his son want? He want to take it with him someplace?
Well, I don't know. He wanted to know what year it was, and how much I gave him for it, and he was kind of mad about it. He wouldn't just much say that I stole it.
Yeah.
Geez, that...
Was he live in this area?
No, he's down in Oakland. That Jack adopted him. That's Buster Thompson's brother.
Uh-huh.
And so he changed his name to Hillard.
I see.
Old Jack adopted him. His dad used to have a two-story building down here on the corner from upstream from that warehouse down there. That was the Eagle Trading Company. That was old Clyde Thompson.
That's Buster Thompson's father?
Mm-hmm. Real father. Then he had two families. Then he married an Indian gal up in the village and raised a family.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget, Vera Thompson, that was her name. She's buried up there. That's his, I think it's Mrs. Steele's sister.
Is she still living?
No. No, she's buried up there.
Well, she's buried here in the...
Yeah.
Well, Buster Thompson, he's the one at Manly now.
Yeah, he's a retired school teacher now.
Yeah, now, isn't he the one who just bought this house next to...
That's Jack Barney? Hillard's old cabin, yeah.
Yeah, Jack Hillard's old cabin. Yeah.
He and Bill Simpanen.
Bill Simpanen?
Mm-hmm. He's a local boy.
Bill or George Simpanen?
George,
No, Bill. His dad's name was Bill, too. He came over here, take him over here to
see. Was there two Simpanen boys then?
I think so. Oh. Must have been because...
I never heard of him, but I know George.
Yeah, but he works for Sourdough.
Yeah, well, that's George. His name is George.
I thought they told me his name was Bill. And I asked him then if he was Bill Jr. He says, no, that's my dad. Because I knew his dad well. Nice old fin.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
His boy was with him too, wasn't he, when he was over the other day? George's boy.
No, Buster Thompson was with him.
Oh, just the two
and,
of them.
And he's got an interest in that cabin now.
George.
Him and, yeah, him and Buster bought that together. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a dandy little cabin.
Yeah, nice place. Nice location.
Yeah. And old Jack, he just got that new hemlock floor put in there, or just about out. And here comes Sullivan. He used to be the Internal Revenue man there in town. He had a pair of cork boots on. And his old footsteps are still in that nice.
Oh, no kidding.
New floor. Oh, gee, oh, Jack felt bad about that. Still there. Cork marks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as far as interesting characters, it seemed like they're all sadly missed. Old John Powers, a senator, he's had this spread guy in that barn, you know. He had quite a spread going here.
Did he have the mule barn after
no,
one time?
No, this other barn right along the road down here.
Oh, I missed that one, I guess.
Yeah, it's about the biggest building in town.
Is it still standing?
Yeah, and he had a pack string, you know, freighting and a mail contract. Winter and summer. He killed off a lot of horses on that, on them summers, you know.
Were there very many of the Klondike Stampeders who ended up here in Eagle?
Well, Bob Steele was one, only he came in up the Copper River and around about down the 40 mile and up to Dawson.
Oh.
And he told me he got a job washing dishes in a restaurant after he seen everything was staked. And Bob Murray used to be down here. Used to live down here. He was an old stampeder. He was one of the original discoverers of this of this gold run out here in North Fork of the 40 Mile.
Mm-hmm.
And he used to mine a lot out here on American Creek. He was an old Nova Scotian. Too bad you couldn't have met him. Boy, he was.